Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it's the 2021 debut of PGA Tour Golf. It was a lovely week in Paradise, and we're recapping it, plus looking forward to more action from the Big Island and the Sony Open this week. And everything that we were tuned into in the past week, there was a lot. We'll get to it step by step with you guys. Outside of sports, we're talking Twitter bans, awkward awards, and much more. Plus, this week's guest, tailor-made for the podcast, Chef Michael Ponzio. This is a guy who ran the kitchen at Medina Country Club, and he also hosts Fairway to Table on Golf Pass, a great golf and food series. We'll get into that and a whole lot more, and finish with some NFL playoff super wild card weekend recap and our January diet updates. All of it is brought to you by our friends at FlightScope and the Mevo unit. I've talked about it for a while now, but it's the real deal. The Mevo unit is that portable accessory that you need in your golf game. It helps you practice. It gives you the data that you need with every single swing you take. It tells you exactly how far you're hitting the ball on any given day. Like I said, it's less than the size of your wallet. It can fit in your golf bag easily, and it's a great unit that gets you all the information you need for your golf game and allows you to tune in and get yourself dialed in for any round. So again, it's FlightScope Golf, and it's the Mevo. Be sure to check it out. Our promo code is COL10 for 10% off of the Mevo unit, and that's FlightScopeGolf.com. Again, the Mevo is 10% off with promo code COL10.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Groove It Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex, and it's here, Alex. We got golf in 2021.
Wow.
It happened, and we got to break in the new year with free golf. We got extra golf, and we got to see someone return to the winner's circle for the first time since 2013.
Well put, Mike. Harris English was that winner for the first time in 7 going on 8 years on tour. It's kind of funny because you'll remember that Hudson Swafford won in the last couple months as well, too. And Hudson Swafford and Harris English are essentially twins. If you put side-by-side pictures of the two of them next to each other, it's very hard to tell them apart. So that might be confusing people, but they are indeed separate individuals. It's English, the Georgia Bulldog alum, who got, I believe, his third win on tour and an impressive one in a playoff. Like you said, free golf, had to beat Joaquin Niemann on hole one there at Kapalua, but a stunning week in Paradise and just birdies everywhere.
Yeah, and of course, this was the tournament of champions, and then a whole plethora of non-champions joined them as well. Obviously, it was a loaded leaderboard. We had a lot of big names toward the top. Let's talk about Justin Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, was just flirting around the lead pretty much all week. And again, like I said, I need to emphasize the fact that birdies were galore everywhere, going off everywhere at every turn. Every moment you turn the camera, we saw another birdie. Four of my five picks, Mike, were like 19 under, 17 under, 16 under, and 15 under for the week. And they didn't even sniff being in contention on Sunday. That just shows you how many birdies were made. I think English got to 25 along with Niemann to get to that playoff under par. So yeah, Justin Thomas, just a couple putts go begging on the back nine on Sunday for him. Very consistent play, but didn't get it done in the final nine to get another trophy, which I know he admired. He loves winning in Hawaii.
Yeah. Then, of course, there was the incident with Justin Thomas and the calls right now for him to be donating his entire winnings to LGBTQ.
Yes. That was dicey, too. Oh, man. Yeah. Essentially, it was the not great, you know, F word slur that none of us like using or associating at all. And it came out kind of pretty just haphazardly after he missed a short par putt. I believe that was on Saturday. And Justin Thomas has some issues with his mouth. Not a ton. He hasn't gotten fined a ton, but this one just kind of particularly stung because of how hot the mics were all week and the way it came off of his tongue. Not a great look by any means.
No, he did apologize, but obviously that kind of language is just simply not appropriate. We also saw some heated Jon Rahm was out there as well with metal spikes.
I know. Yeah. So again, we had to talk about how hot these mics were all week. You and I love a hot mic, but they were picking up swears left and right. There were. I tweeted out that there were more F-bombs in like a 2 or 3 hour period on Friday that I'd heard on any golf broadcast in the past few years. It was legendary. The guys were really lamenting these greens. John Rahm, you would think he was playing it like a Muni golf course, like you and I play at, the way he was complaining about these greens and the spike marks everywhere. And yes, the F-bombs were indeed flying all week. In Paradise too, Mike. You know, you would think these guys can lighten up. We're at a tournament of champions in Paradise, and these guys just they still can't help themselves.
Hey, a win's a win.
Yes, that's right. And they celebrated how they know how is complain about greens in Hawaii.
Yeah. Right. That's right. And, you know, Hawaii, obviously a beautiful place. We've had interviews on this podcast with some people who call Hawaii home, namely Sean Lanyi and Noah Hester. And, you know, it's just beautiful there.
It's so scenic. It's and if you get to following the guests like you and I do, you see Noah's sunset pictures cooking on the ocean every night and all the different recipes he's concocting. And Sean Lanyi, a great putting instructor who I was sharing some tweets with, and he spent a lot of time at Kapalua as a teacher there as well. So if you want to check out the archives for those interviews, definitely check us out wherever you're listening to this podcast. Every platform has our archived episodes, including themorningread.com, which is our official content network. So lots of Hawaii content, not only in the weeks to come, not only this past weekend, but in our archives as well.
Yeah, and they stay in Hawaii, of course, for the Sony Open next. What are the chances of Harris English joining Ernie Els and Justin Thomas to sweep the Aloha swing?
Oh, nice stat there. I like that. What was that? Wait, Ernie Els, Justin Thomas? Yes, okay. Yep. I vaguely remember Ernie Els doing that. I want to say that was late 90s, early 2000s.
2003.
Got it. Okay, perfect. So, Aaron Baddeley in a playoff. My weird memory is triggering right now. Mm-hmm. And Justin Thomas with the back-to-back, he slipped in a 59 in that back-to-back in the Sony Open at this tournament a couple of years back when he did that. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if he goes back to back. This is a guy that has had a lot of consistent finishes. If you look at Harris English's results over like the past 6 months, it's stunningly consistent. Just top 10s and top 20s everywhere. So you got to figure he's going to put himself somewhere near contention with the way he's playing.
Yeah, and you got to think he is, of course, still another loaded leaderboard with the likes of Colin Morikawa, Webb Simpson, just easy money almost every week as he was last year. So what are you thinking about this? Who's on your radar for this week?
Yeah, you actually just took one out right there. I like Webb Simpson. I'm going to have a full card at Course of Life 1 on Twitter. Podcast exclusive pick is going to be a guy with a great short game who enjoys playing in the wind, hits it low. I follow his caddy as well, too. They're a fun follow. It's the pair of Dale Trail and Abraham Answer, the Mexican who's shown up in international competitions in the last couple of years. He's been in contention a lot recently. His game is coming around nicely. That's going to be a pick I'm going to add to my card for picks this week. I know you're going to finally dip your toe in the water. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hit you with my picks Wednesday afternoon. And then you take a look at that card and you tell me who you're feeling. And I'll get you in on a couple names so we can make some money together.
Okay? Supposed to start last week, but we'll get into that later. Yes.
That's right. One other thing I wanted to mention too is a lot of the mini tour guys that we followed and interviewed on this podcast, a lot of them were out. This is the first Monday queue of the year on the PGA Tour in 2021. Mm-hmm. I saw Dylan Wu took the flight out there. I don't believe he's going to qualify, but stay tuned and watch out for those Monday qualifiers because as we've profiled in the show before, it just takes 1 week, Mike, to change all your dreams and flip your life upside down in professional golf. That's the beauty of the game. So watch out for maybe one of those Monday cues to shine this week.
We can't wait. We will be talking on Twitter about the Sony Open. We'll talk about what happens next week. Keep an eye out for Alex's card on Wednesday on the Twitters.
Indeed.
It'll be great. Let's flip over to Tuned In with what we're checking out outside of the world of sports. What you got down there in Texas?
Yeah, so I was tuned into something that I had not been tuned into in my place of residence in, at least a decade now we're going on. We're really dating ourselves here. This is how time flies. It's been 10 and a half years since I moved to Austin, Texas, Michael. 10 and a half years. That's the last time I was really weather watching for any sort of significant winter weather. We've had about 3 or 4 just kind of dustings here over the decade that I lived here, but everything came together and we had a snowpocalypse event in Central Texas, Michael. Brace yourself. There was 4 inches of snow in Austin, Texas on Sunday. I was watching the weather all weekend. The front came in. It got cold enough. It was a full football Sunday of snowy weather. Got to make the snowman, have the snowball fights, hit some shots. You can check out my Instagram and ours at COL Podcast, and I'm at Course of Life Alex. I did some snow golf in the backyard. It was full of nostalgia. Back in the snow.
I have to ask, because when it snowed when I was a kid, that meant we made cookies. So did you bake any cookies on your snow day?
We did. We made some chicken in the oven, did some lovely chicken drumsticks, trying to stay healthy on the diet, which we'll get to later. But you'll appreciate, I made a nice little peppermint hot chocolate. Just great. Threw some candy canes in there to relive that winter flavor. Sip that while I was, you know, lighting my outdoor fire pit and watching the snowfall. It's quite a vibe. If you're trying to see it in photo, again, check out my Instagram at Course of Life Alex, because it was a wonderful Sunday in the snow. A real treat for us Central Texans now. I'm officially calling myself one because that's how giddy I was to see snow. I felt like a foreigner, even though I'd seen snow my entire childhood. It was truly a moment of joy for me on Sunday.
I'm happy for you. I
had to get that out because it was kind of it was definitely the highlight of last week for sure. It was really the only thing I had to look forward to with everything going on in our world.
It certainly is a moment of joy. Yes. Because while you got to watch the snow, I was continuing my doom scrolling, as I think most of us have been doing, thanks to what we'll dub it Sedition Wednesday.
You gave it a nickname. Nice work.
That was most certainly what I was tuned into on Wednesday. You know, I started my little staycation on Wednesday, and
that was a timing, right? Yeah,
great start to the week. Nothing quite like seeing a failed coup orchestrated by the president of your country to start off your staycation.
That was a perfect segue to pop politics as we roll right into that, Mike. So that happened on Wednesday. We don't get too graphically into the sides of what happened on Wednesday. Everyone can agree that was a mess. There's no way to disagree on that take. But what we want to talk about is kind of the fallout on the internet and in the golf world that resulted from everything that happened last week. Definitely not something I would have predicted if you had asked me last Wednesday what the consequences would have been, but they were pretty deep in all aspects.
Yeah. Of course, the most shocking one was the complete and utter ban of Trump from Twitter. I'm not opposed to this at all, but boy, we're missing some entertaining tweets now.
We are. Yes. And again, that's the thing is, like, you know, no matter how you feel about this president right now, his Twitter was definitely a lightning rod for entertainment. If it was nothing else at all, it's incredibly hard to get banned from Twitter. Mike, before we popped on, I looked up the list of people that are actually banned permanently from Twitter. It's not a very good list you want to be on, by the way.
One name you did share, Pharma Bro, which I completely forgot about.
Shout out to Martin Shkreli. Kanye was on here because of the temporary ban, but he's back. But yeah, it's not a good list of people. You can check it out on Wikipedia for yourself. But that was the most notable one. He joins Pharma Bro as the permanently banned people on Twitter. So then the ban hit on social, but then like this actually got into real world implications in the world of golf, which was very fascinating to us because you and I, we read Commander in Chief. We understand that for everything you want to think about this president, he has an extremely large amount of ties to the world of golf.
He does.
To see the fallout and everything that happened around the world of golf this past week was very interesting as well.
Yeah, I do think that there was, just backtracking a minute here, but Scotland said that Trump would not be welcome in their country during the inauguration or post-inauguration. And of course, there were rumors that this was going to be happening anyway. And then there were rumors that this was going to be announced post-inauguration. And then it just went ahead and came out. The PGA 2022 PGA Championship will not be at his course.
Right. So yeah. Trump Bedminster is where it was supposed to be in 2022. So the PGA officially revoked that. And Mike, you know how big a deal that is. They book and plan those major championships like 7-8 years out. So for them to take this course of action at about 18 months out or so, tells you they mean business. And it ended up happening across the pond, like you mentioned as well, too. You know, Trump, we talked about it. And when we read through Commander in Chief, how he went through, he moved mountains to buy Turnberry and turn that into a British Open venue where he could call it his home and bring the Open there. It sounds like the Open's not going to go to Turnberry and take that out of the rota for the temporary future as well, too. So interesting to see these huge ramifications in the golf world, Mike, because, you know, Trump always kind of had that safe haven of no matter what was going on in the world or during his presidency or all the things you disagree with him, he could always go to the world of golf. And there was kind of sort of a safety net for him there because he had allies there and he had tournaments and courses and networks there. It appears like even that safety net might be being taken away from him right now.
Yeah, and surprisingly, he was scheduled this week to be giving out medals of freedom to Gary Player and Annika Sorenstam.
I don't think that got televised. I think they went.
It was done in private. It was not televised. God. It was done on Thursday. I mean, are Gary Player and Annika Sorenstam deserving of these medals of freedom? Most definitely.
But dang, first off, you know, like I kind of like want to be like upset at them for going in the moment, but also just horrible timing, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure they'd already gone to Washington Wednesday happened, and here they are about to receive one of the greatest honors of their life. And they're like, oh, God, well, I mean, I guess we have to go, right? Or do we have to go? It is a very terribly awkward situation for the two of them.
It sounds like you don't need to go because then news broke that Bill Belichick was going to be awarded one. And just breaking before we sat down to record here on a Monday evening.
Breaking news.
He's not.
He's right? Not going. Yeah. Bill Belichick is not going. So, again, just really shocking. Again, straight, you know, pop politics. And we like to look at this from a cultural perspective. You know, outside of the events of last week, all the things that the president's losing just outside of politics and these allies in the world of sports and golf specifically that he grew accustomed to falling back on. Losing those allies right now. So interesting times. I don't know what other golf ramifications there are, but who knows what's to come next to this news.
I'm just going to leave this little tidbit and then we're going to move on.
Yeah.
We'll see who's president when we record next week before the inauguration.
Yes. Fair enough.
Let's move on. Let's continue to provide a fantastic escape from reality like we try to do here. Let's get into this week's guest.
Yeah, definitely. So on this show, you know, we've made it abundantly clear that we like to go out. We like to play a round of golf. But really, maybe even more importantly, when that round of golf is over, we're big fans of the 19th hole. We're big foodies. We like to eat. We like to go places, go out to eat. So
once the pandemic is over, we will.
And yeah, having a guest like this on the podcast is perfect because not only does he have the chef and culinary experience that you and I love? This conversation is awesome with Chef Michael Ponzio. But he's also headed up some amazing clubhouse kitchens as well at iconic venues like Medina. So he takes us behind the scenes there as well. Very cool stuff.
I can't wait to hear this one. And before we get into this conversation with Michael Ponzio, we want to let you know that it's brought to you by our friends at Groove It Golf, makers of the Groove It Golf Brush. New Year's resolutions are to keep your club face clean in 2021, and Groove It makes it easy with a built-in pump inside the brush that sprays water, a cleaning solution right onto the club face. It's quick and efficient. It's what you need to play quickly because we need to play faster on the course.
We need that too. I love it. Yeah.
The average golf brush is stuck to your bag. The Groove It has detachable magnets to make it easy to use. Plus, the brush head comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. If you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, set it back and Groove It will get you a free replacement. Now that is reliability. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control the clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groove It, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So check it out, grooveitbrush.com. Get your Groove It brush there. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com.
Next up on the tee from just outside Chicago, Illinois, we have an award-winning chef who has tons of experience in Chicago kitchens and as the executive chef at Medina Country Club as well, too, an iconic golf venue. He hosts Fairway to Table, which we'll get into as well. It's Chef Michael Ponzio joining the Course Life. Michael, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah. Thanks for hopping on. Like I said before we got on here, you definitely bring the best of both worlds with not only your golf experience, but your food experience in the kitchen as well. So it's great to have you on the podcast. But let's start from the beginning with you. You grew up just outside of Chicago, an Italian family just outside of Chicago. Take us through the smells in your kitchen that you remember as a kid, because I'm sure you definitely picked up a lot as a young age growing up in a family like that.
Oh, you know, I always laugh about it because my family growing up was like something you'd see in a movie. My grandmother lived across the street. My entire block was my cousins and aunts and uncles. It was crazy. I have four brothers. There were seven of us in the house, and it was always food was what always brought us together. No matter what, I started working at my uncle's restaurant at a young age, bussing tables, doing dishes, whatever I could. But growing up was just insane. I mean, my father had a rule: no matter what was going on, you had to be at the dinner table at 5 o'clock. And that was dinner. That was the rule of law. No matter where you were home for dinner. And it just was always what brought us together.
Very cool. Yeah, I love that. And you learned a lot of homestyle cooking at a young age with your family get-togethers and whatnot. I'm curious, at what age was it when you got into cooking, when you realized or maybe thought to yourself, like, I think I would like to make a living cooking? How early did that happen for you?
You know, cooking has always been a part of my life. I mean, when my Nona eventually moved in with us, it was... I could be out till 4 a.m. and by 6 a.m. she was waking me up to peel garlic, and it was miserable and terrible, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. So I went to school for graphic design originally because I was really interested in art and computers. And about a year and a half into it, I went to culinary school because I wanted to manage a restaurant. I worked in restaurants my whole life. And when I was in culinary school, you know, I never thought as much about pursuing the cooking side professionally, even though I had been doing it for so long. I started to learn about the science and just the whole broadened view outside of just chicken parmigiana and stuffed shells restaurants.
Right.
And once I started to see it, I just became so hungry for knowledge and just wanted more and more. And I think I was around 19 years old at the time, 19 or 20, that I started working like crazy. I worked three jobs when I was in school. I was working at a bakery, a bar, a restaurant, all at the same time. Because I wanted to take it all in and get, you know, my hands on anything and everything I could, because I was so hungry to figure it out. And that's when I made the decision that this was the direction I wanted to go.
Love that. Cool. So in terms of geographically, was the career path always focused on Chicago for you, or did it take you other places, or were you always kind of grounded and knew you wanted to be in Chicago? So from what I hear, it's a pretty awesome dining scene that I've yet to explore the full extent of, but what was your path looking like at a young age in restaurants?
So when I got out of school, I had two very amazing offers in front of me, and a lot of it was because I kept working so much. So I actually built up a resume when I was in culinary school. So I got out of school. I had two offers in front, well, three actually. One was in Las Vegas at an Italian restaurant in the Venetian. One was at Spiaggia in Chicago to be a sous chef. And one was at Mon Ami Gabi in Chicago with the potential of moving to Vegas too. And I really sat down and looked and said, okay, I could go to Spiaggia, which was the only 4-star restaurant in Chicago, and really take on a whole new level of Italian food like I've never taken before. Or I can go to Vegas and cook this, you know, Chicago style kind of home style cooking like I've always done, but in Vegas. So I went to Vegas without taking the job. I went out there to interview by myself. And if you've ever been to Vegas by yourself as an outsider, it is eye opening. And about a day and a half into it, I was sitting just talking to a local, and they were kind of walking me through the culture and what the people were like. And I don't know, I just immediately wanted to go home to Chicago, and it's been home ever since. And my main job has always been in Chicago, but I've gone around the country and around the world cooking with chefs and learning and growing, but I've always worked in Chicago.
Very cool. Yeah. Vegas is a cool place to visit, but it definitely is a different beast in terms of wanting to live there and be there full time. So I get that. And Chicago, great city in its own right. Let's just talk real quickly about, like I mentioned, Chicago as a dining scene. You know, I've been to classic, you know, restaurants there and had deep dish there and Italian beef there and whatnot, but talk about the dining scene in terms of fine dining as well. I feel like it's kind of sneaky, like a top restaurant city, in the United States, but, What type of variety can people expect to see when they go to Chicago and go to these nicer places?
I mean, Chicago is one of the most amazing cities in the country, honestly, in my opinion, because when you hear a Chicago outside here, all you think of are Italian beef, hot dogs, and deep dish. And that's the stigma. But Chicago has some of the top restaurants in the world. You know, when it comes to fine dining, like Alinea, it has some of the top chefs in the country running their restaurants. And it's amazing the culinary scene, how it's grown. Whereas when I started out, it was New York, New York, New York, and a little bit of LA. And now, I mean, it feels like it's Chicago has exploded. And the talent with these chefs and the things that they're doing, you can find anything in Chicago. And the general theme of the town is very Mediterranean based with the food, but the techniques and skills are just unbelievable.
Nice. So that's kind of the food background on yourself. Let's get into the golf background now. You ended up getting roles working in different clubhouse kitchens, which we'll talk about. Did you ever play a lot of golf growing up? What was your first contact with the game?
I was a caddy as a young kid. Did not like golf then. I did not like golf up until a few years ago, to be honest with you. I was the chef in Medina for 7 years and I never swung a golf club. Wow. I know. And the whole time I was working there, I'm like, I'm going to regret never playing number three. And so I do. I regret it. I just got into golf actually about 2 years ago. I just started golfing and I love it now. It's amazing. I was at a simulator the other day with my brother, played a few rounds this last summer, and really have gotten more and more into it now that I understand the game more.
Nice. So have you gotten back to play Medina yet?
Not yet. I plan on it. I have some friends there with the members and things that, you know, have invited me to golf several times. I just haven't had time to get back there to play.
I would hope so. Hopefully you get back there soon. And that venue, for people who don't know it already, it's hosted 5 major championships and a Ryder Cup in 2012. When did you get there and when was your tenure specifically?
So I was there for 7 years. I got there in 2012. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2012. I got there right after the Ryder Cup and I left right after the BMW.
Okay. Nice. Very cool. So that venue, again, it's hosted a lot of amazing golf tournaments in the history of the game. But you'll know this part, the clubhouse specifically. It's just a very noticeable setting. You got the circular putting green with the backdrop of the clubhouse. Tell everyone what that venue inside is like and what that was like, being in charge there and running the kitchen at Medina.
It was a dream. I'll tell you, being able to work in one of the most iconic clubhouses in golf is really cool. And the first day I walked in, when you walk in, there's this big dome ceiling inside and it's like walking into the Vatican. And if you ever want to be intimidated for an interview, walk into a place that is about something you know nothing about in a building that looks like that. It's the only interview I've ever actually been intimidated for.
Yes, I bet.
But I mean, it was just, the whole property was incredible. And especially as we built more things there, but to be able to hop on a golf course and take a ride, you know, out in the middle of the course and just take a deep breath when you're having a bad day, or walk around the building and just look at the beauty and the history and everything's so celebrated there. And it's celebrated through the people, through the members, which was incredible too. It's just a lot of pride and a lot of the coolest thing about Medina is it wasn't an uppity club. You know, the members were very normal, down to earth, what felt like a lot of blue collared people, which really was, you know, made me fit in there. It made me really appreciate it.
That's encouraging to hear. No, I like that perspective for sure. In terms of like the events, what's the difference when you're running the kitchen Medina there, you know, versus just a standard, you know, Friday or Saturday, something or at the club, or when they're hosting like a more large scale event or even like a BMW championship week? How does that differ for you in what your responsibilities are?
Well, we tried to make it so it didn't. You know, one of the big things that Medina was pushing the whole initiative of from scratch and kind of taking a different approach. When I applied there, the GM asked me if I wanted to work at a golf course because I wasn't into golf. And I said, I don't. I want to work in the kitchen and I want to make this clubhouse about food, not golf. The courses are about golf, but inside it should be about the food. And so we started building things. We built a garden. We built a chicken coop. We tapped the trees to make our own maple syrup. We brought in honeybees and had our own honey.
Love that.
That was unbelievable. And it was so much fun. We rolled out big smoking programs, all sorts of things. So when it came time for bigger events, we started warming up and prepping and doing things where we were working all these interactive stations and trying all these little fine artisan techniques, but on larger scales, so that come the BMW, we actually did about 95% of the BMW tournament from scratch. We were baking bagels fresh from scratch overnight. We were making all the meatballs by hand. We smoked all our own pork butts and briskets. And, you know, a lot of tournaments, because of the sheer volume, oftentimes, you know, you'll go to pre-prepared items, you know, boxed items and all that. And that wasn't the Medina way, you know, that wasn't the way we wanted to do it. So we said, we're going to work harder and longer. And it took an insane amount of planning and an insane amount of riling up the team. But that week was probably one of the greatest accomplishments of my career so far.
I love that. 95% from scratch. That's a stunning figure for anyone who's been to a full-size PGA Tour golf event, understands how many thousands are moving through there throughout the week. That's really hard to accomplish. So I commend you for that. That's a cool moment to share with us. I appreciate that perspective. Michael Ponzio joining us, Fairway to Table, which we'll get into in a moment. But what have you learned? You're a bit of an outsider now. You said you just took up the game in the last few years, but working in these golf kitchens like Medina, what have you learned about kind of like the 19th hole? We love talking about the clubhouse meal that follows the 18 hole rounds and kind of cooking for a golf audience. What have you kind of taken from the last several years working in clubs?
Well, I think the biggest thing I've learned is, you know, no matter how much, you know, prestige or money or anything someone has, they love chicken wings.
Yes.
You know, it's the coolest thing about the 19th hole. And I always, you know, I learned this quickly and then kind of formed my time at Medina off it, is that's where the connections happen. And, you know, you can get someone before a round and see them in the morning, and then you can catch them up passing through. Maybe they're running to the locker room. And then you see them for dinner with their family. And it's really just a chance to connect. And through dining, you know, through cooking for someone and spending time together, you can really make long-term emotional connections. And, you know, that 19th hole, it's powerful to be in. And I think that it really, it's where people at the end of the day celebrate victory. They get, you know, pissed off about a bad round and think through it. They, you know, they connect with new people. They make business deals. It's really a magical place.
It is. I love that explanation. We'll get back to the 19th hole a little later, but let's talk about Fairway to Table now. Just first off, how did that opportunity come about for you to do this show? It's on Golf Pass for those who haven't seen it. There's clips on YouTube of episodes as well. How did the show first come about and get directed to you?
So I was approached by the Golf Channel for an interview, an exclusive interview, when I was in New Orleans speaking at a conference. And we sat down and did an interview, and I walked them through all the programs at Medina and all the things we were doing. And they had never heard of stuff like that to the extent of what we were doing. So they actually flew out to Chicago, flew a film crew, and actually filmed a My Daily Routine, which is on Golf Pass also. They make them a lot about the athletes and the coaches, but they made this one about me and walking through the Medina programs and what we do. And it's really cool. And from there, you know, I got super excited and really started thinking, you know, this is really cool. This can grow into be something else, because club chefs are amazingly talented, but get zero recognition in, you know, the outside world, because we don't win the awards. We're not eligible for the awards like the John Bon Shea Award, the James Beard Award, because those are for public restaurants.
Oh, okay. And yeah.
I wanted to find a way to highlight these chefs and show these kind of secrets and like the amazing stuff that they do. And I came up with this concept of Fairway to Table. I had a different name for it at a time. But I had pitched a concept to the Golf Channel and they loved it, and they decided to get behind it and go with it. And they found a sponsor and we started filming. I mean, it was cool. I sent them my pitch. They flew out to talk to me. We talked through it. I kind of blew them up with my crazy ideas. And the producer, Donnie, who is one of the most talented guys I've ever worked with, he put kind of the rock and roll and art behind it and really made it something that was worth watching and, you know, would appeal to golfers and foodies.
It is. It hits our pocket of fans and listeners perfectly as well, too. All the things that we love about getting out to the golf course for a day with your friends or family. Again, it's a great series. Chef Michael Ponzio, Fairway to Table, Golf Pass. One episode that we have to talk about. I'm going to get selfish and talk about Austin, Texas, a city which I know you love. I've lived in for the past 10 years now. You got to come to Austin Country Club, basically my second home. I've been a volunteer at the match play since it got here 4 or 5 years ago. So I love spending a week there every March. Sad that we missed the tournament this past year, but excited to get back there soon. Tell everyone about your experience there at ACC.
I got to say, Austin was one of my favorite places to shoot. And it was because, you know, we dove into not just Austin Country Club, but the entire Austin area. We went to Louis Miller Barbecue and smoked meats with the pitmaster there. But the team at Austin Country Club was amazing. The chef Bob is so smart and so into food and so kind and welcoming. And, you know, he was funny and his pastry chef was great. I mean, we really just connected. We still talk. We still send each other text messages and emails. But what he does there and the type of operation he does and his team and the way they respond to it is, it's really admirable. And you don't see it in a lot of restaurants, how that kind of camaraderie and mentorship, like what he leads there.
Yeah, you can see the video for yourself again, Golf Pass YouTube for clips as well too. A couple of things that I saw that we got to talk about. Let's first talk about that Korean inspired brisket there. And what were the special ingredients to make that flavor pop? Because that was a different spin on brisket, which is usually a pretty plain, untouched meat in Central Texas barbecue. But I love that spin that they put on it.
Oh, I absolutely love that he did that and kind of went outside the comfort zone in doing the brisket. That was honestly amazingly delicious. And when he was telling me on the phone that was the dish he was going to do for the episode, I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of fusion, but you know, it's his club and his recipe. And when I went out there and tried it, I was beyond surprised. I mean, texturally, the vegetables were super fresh and high quality. It had a crunch. The brisket was smoked fantastically. He incorporated the egg. It was just, the flavors were over the top, and it was a different journey in brisket town, and it was really amazing to do.
I love that. And then there was some axis being made too, which is really cool. Describe to everyone what axis is, because when I first heard that word, I was like, wait, what are they making there? But we'll explain what that dish was.
Well, when I first heard that word, I said the same thing. Nice. You know, axis is a Texas dish, a Texas meat. It's a type of venison, and it's one of the finest venisons you can get. It originated in India and was brought over here. And now, actually, Chef Bob taught me this, that Austin or Texas has more axis than India does nowadays. But it's an amazing, amazing piece of venison. I had never heard of it. I had never cooked with it before. So when he and I were talking, I said, well, the hell, we'll give it a try. And it was gorgeous. I mean, a very light, gamey flavor, insanely tender. It was the star of the dish, not what I put with it.
Yeah. And then last but not least was the dinosaur bone beef rib as well too. I love showing those off to any visitors who come to a barbecue place. They don't understand why one rib is $20, and then they get it and they understand exactly why. It's really some amazing stuff you put on display at ACC there. That was really cool. Hopefully we see you out there again at ACC, or maybe I'll see you out there for a match play tournament week as well too. Yeah,
it'd be great. You know, we filmed Hazeltine, we filmed Olympia Fields, and then everything kind of got halted because of COVID. So
yeah.
You know, we're hoping to pick back up, but right now, I mean, we can't really plan because, you know, my film crew comes from Austin. My producer comes from Florida. I come from Chicago. So there's so many different variables.
Yep, definitely.
You know, that we're kind of just on hold right now, but hopefully we're coming back. They also released the full episode of the Austin Country Club Fairway to Table episode on YouTube. So you can see the whole thing on there.
Love that. Again, it's Fairway to Table, Chef Michael Ponzio. Let's get into some quick shots before we wrap up here. Just your real quick thought answers to these questions. You haven't been playing very long, only for a few years, but what is your either highlight round, or do you have a hole in one or amazing shot under your belt yet on the course?
Man, I'm just happy to finish 18. Honestly, I don't have a highlight round. I will say, even though he'll never hear this, this summer I was out golfing with my neighbor, who's a fairly regular golfer, and I outdrove him on like three holes. So I don't let him live that down.
Nice. It's always good to get the long ball in there and tease your buddy about it.
Just got
to
do it once.
Yes. One other cool thing, you do a lot of really cool video content on YouTube as well. Your best burger video is very popular online. I want you to just share one tip, which I'd never really seen, and despite all the burgers I made in my life, about the little cylindrical device that you use to actually help form the beef patty and what that helped do to make an easy, great burger.
The ring mold. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you can use a piece of PVC pipe, a 4-inch PVC pipe, 5-inch PVC, anything like that, cookie cutter. But what it does is it kind of helps you pack the burger without overpacking it with like a burger press that's going to smash the meat and break up the fibers and the muscles. So this is just a nice way to gently pack it and form it so it stays together. I was surprised how popular that burger video was because, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about chicken wings. It's like something so simple, but people can relate to it, want to eat it, want to cook it.
Indeed. Yeah. Speaking of things that people want to cook, let's do a couple of quick pizza questions. Pizza at home, I feel like, has made a big resurgence in the last year because of everything going on. A lot of people are just kind of throwing in the general oven like I am. I'm experimenting with different doughs and sauces and whatnot. But any tips for people who are just kind of now coming around to making pizza a little bit more often at home?
Yeah. You know, pizza is a huge thing at my house. If you go on my Instagram, you'll see I bought a wood burning oven over the summer and we put a lot of pizzas through there this summer. So I think it all starts with what kind of pizza you want to make. Do you want that Detroit style pan pizza? Do you want Chicago deep dish, a thin tavern pizza like New York or a Napolitano pizza? And once you do that, you really got to kind of get consistent with what you're doing, your hydration levels, how wet and sticky the dough is. But another big tip that I tell people is every time you make pizza, take a piece of that dough and put it in the freezer and then slack it out the day before you make pizza next and keep adding it to the dough, because what you're going to do is build a sour flavor over time and get that sourdough flavor into your dough. So it really helps kind of enhance from just having a plain bread tasting pizza to a dough with some structure and some real depth to it.
Good tip indeed. And then in terms of Chicago, what's your favorite deep dish spot in the city?
You're going to get me kicked out of here. I don't like deep dish.
Oh, wow. I've heard that take before from some Chicagoans. So that you're not alone there. I've heard that. It's been said on the podcast.
I love a bite of Lou Malnati's deep dish. I do. I just to sit down and eat that much bread, it's not as appealing to me. If I was an outsider visiting, I would absolutely hit Lou Malnati's.
Yep. And you're right. Like that one slice is fantastic. And then anything after that is like, it's sitting in your stomach for a while, for sure.
For sure. But you have to do it. If you come to Chicago, you have to do it.
Love that. And then, like I said before, we love talking 19th hole. We end every interview with the 19th hole question. So who better to ask Chef Ponzio on Instagram, Michael Ponzio, the host of Fairway to Table. What's your ideal 19th hole meal when you get off the course playing 18 holes? What do you like to order in the clubhouse for a meal and a drink?
Wow. Well, drink, I always go to bourbon. I'm a bourbon lover. Nice. You know, so if I have a good bourbon, a Colonel Taylor, anything like that, I am thrilled. To eat normally off the course when it's that hot out and stuff, I honestly end up veering towards a salad. I love a good hearty chopped salad.
Nice and light. Yeah, like I could do a cheek chicken Caesar as well too. It's a nice post round as well. Just for enough heartiness, good enough flavor too.
Doesn't do well soaking up the booze, but it tastes good.
Yeah, got to do what you got to do. Appreciate you again, Chef Michael Ponzio, for taking the time to join us. Looking forward to watching more Fairway to Table when you get back to filming, and hit them straight as well too.
You too, brother. Thank you.
That interview with Michael Ponzio is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It is a unique and one-of-a-kind phone holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with any phone model and Velcros onto the cart in seconds. Keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And for our loyal and wonderful listeners, you can save 20% off your purchase with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. That code gets you 20% off your Phone Caddy and off their patriotic line of phone caddies, typically excluded from any deal. So again, you can get your Phone Caddy today with promo code COURSEOFLIFE for 20% off at DesertFoxGolf.com. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at DesertFoxGolf.com. Go get your Phone Caddy today. Great interview there with Michael Ponzio. Man, that's a lot of food to make a scratch at the BMW Championship, and especially Kraft honey.
Oh, that's yes. I like that was your favorite tidbit.
Yes.
95% of the food. Think about that, Mike. We have a hard enough time like cooking for ourselves from scratch for two people. 95% of the food that they were cranking out of that kitchen for thousands of people at a golf tournament was made from scratch. He went into it in detail. And that's just amazing to hear that they're delivering that quality to a mass like that. It's so cool to get taken behind the scenes. And again, Fairway to Table. Really cool series on Golf Pass. Like you said, that Austin episode, the full episode's up on YouTube, Mike. So you can go watch that right now. Tell me your thoughts on the barbecue they did at Austin Country Club, because that was just divine. Awesome stuff.
Awesome. If you like that interview with Michael Ponzio, plus everything else we do in this podcast, please go ahead and rate us and subscribe on the podcast app of your choice. We say it every week because it's one of the most direct ways you can give us feedback, and we crave feedback.
Yeah. Outside of having our ego fed, attention, fame, and everything like that, we also crave feedback. So we appreciate that. And thank you for checking us out while you're here.
Let's talk college football. Like we said earlier, we're recording this on a Monday evening, which means it is college national championship night with Ohio State and Alabama. So it's the last chance, Alex, for you to win a couple bucks, because I know you've really just kind of broken even here this year.
It is. I'm officially not going to get to that 55% magical number I got to the last two seasons, looking like about 53-point-something% on the year. Overall, basically, that means you essentially broke even or had some pennies or just enough for some drinks or a meal for yourself. It was a tricky year with COVID cancellations, postponements, betting on a team at the morning of, and then an hour before the game, finding out their starting quarterback is out. Just things like that you really couldn't control this year made it very difficult. Nonetheless, they did get to the finish line of the college football season, and hopefully the NFL can do the same as well.
Yeah, the NFL had an interesting weekend. Of course, wild card weekend, lots of interesting games went on throughout. But let's start with the game on Nickelodeon and the slime.
Because, where else would we start? The course of life, we have to start with the Nickelodeon NFL football broadcast, right? It was the Bears and the Saints on Sunday. Like I said, the snow was falling in Texas. I flipped this on. My wife was a Bears fan. I was actually interested in watching the Nickelodeon broadcast. I was like, yeah, okay, I'll give this a go. I loved it. I am not ashamed to say it, Mike. It was goofy. It was cheesy. They were teaching me basic rules of football and reiterating how they works. And you know what? I kind of needed the refresher. It was refreshing. It was lighthearted. And I think this is something that could be repeatable for future games.
So if you had kids and you were watching this game on Nickelodeon, would you then maybe let them play football?
That's a whole other question.
That's the whole reason why this game was on Nickelodeon.
Basically, the one thing you'll appreciate, speaking of hot mics, there was one F-bomb hot mic, and it went right over the Nickelodeon broadcast. Nate Burleson, the commentator, tried to cover it up, like quickly talking over it, but he did fail. Nonetheless, enjoyed the Nickelodeon kid perspective. And then because it's a game on Nickelodeon, it's got to be goofy. Not only was Sean Payton slimed, but Mitch Trubisky, who played a horrible game for the Bears, actually won the online voting for the MVP, Mike. The MVP. So he lost the game, but won the MVP. What a world.
Consolation prize, I guess.
And that's what they said. They're like, well, you know, he tried his hardest, kids, and that's the lesson here today. It was just a wholesome lesson on Nickelodeon's past Sunday.
That's a good lesson. You know what else is a good lesson? Tom Brady doesn't need Bill Belichick and the Patriots to win.
Here's a real lesson. When you have the greatest quarterback of all time on your team, you don't let them go to a different team under any circumstances. That's a real lesson that I'm learning right now. The Bucs rolled. They only won by 8, but they were in control the entire time. And Tom Brady did not look 43. He looked 34. He looked amazing. I am just falling deeper into my spiral now. I have this weird feeling in my stomach that they're going to go to New Orleans and beat Drew Brees and go to Green Bay and beat Aaron Rodgers and be in the Super Bowl. And then that will be absolutely my nightmare.
That's right. A couple other games that went on worth talking about. Can we talk about the Browns and Steelers?
Yes, we can. Moving first, 1969, Mike, the last Browns road playoff win. 1994, the last Browns playoff win. This city needed one bad.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And they got one. It became a quote unquote closer game than it was, maybe, because of course this game started 28-0 in the first quarter. Looked like a blowout. Ben Roethlisberger did everything he can, 501 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, 4 picks. But I think we can say, when you look at the Steelers' schedule, they had a really easy schedule.
Yeah, it was that softest 11-0 team ever, a lot of people were saying. And then they lost, I think, what was that, 5 out of their last 6 or 4 of their last 6? Whatever it wasn't good. And it proved to be soft in the end. And Big Ben crying on the sidelines at the end. Mike, is this over, or does he take $40 million to come back for one more year? You know, I think for that price, he might come back for one more year.
He might come back. We'll see. Yeah. And then they'll lose again to the Browns, and it'll be great. Other teams winning in a play in the postseason for the first time in forever is the Bills.
Yes. Wow. The Bills and the Browns advancing in the playoffs. I just said that out loud.
We can't say only 2020 anymore, but only in the 2020-2021 NFL season.
Seriously,
say that.
Yeah. Shout out to Baker Mayfield for advancing. Shout out to Josh Allen for advancing. Couple young quarterbacks definitely making their hay in the NFL right now. Tough challenges for them. You know, Browns going to Kansas City now. Bills going to be hosting Lamar Jackson, the Ravens, who got a great win this past Sunday afternoon. So good stuff coming in the divisional round here. I'm watching this Tom Brady doomsday scenario play out, and it really does set up for just like the most perfect revenge tour, Mike. Think about it. He could go and beat Drew Brees, knock that comparison out. The only quarterback he has a losing record against. He could go beat Aaron Rodgers, knock that comparison out, and then he could go win a freaking Super Bowl. How unreal would that be?
He could. It would be kind of crazy. You could most certainly do it.
It's in the cards. It's possible. Let's hashtag always in with food, brought to you by our friends at Restelli's Meats, RASTELLIS.com. Our promo code is GOLF10 for 10% off all your purchases on the site. High quality, responsibly sourced meats sent directly to your door. I'm eating a lot of meat and vegetables right now because the diet is still on. We're 1 week through. I have been dodging bread temptations left and right, Mike, but I'm holding on strong.
Yeah, you know, it's most certainly difficult. I don't think you realize how much bread you eat until you realize you shouldn't be eating it.
Oh, it's just the casual bread too. It's just like you order a side Caesar salad and it just comes with that nice little flat piece of garlic bread or something like that. And you're just like, oh, throwing that away. And like I went to a Mediterranean restaurant thinking, oh, I'm going to get the veggie plate. I'm going to get a dolmah and some vegetables and some potatoes and a Greek salad. And then they give you this gigantic pita bread. Picture the sad image of me picking up the pita bread and just walking to the trash and just throwing it in there. It hurts just to say this right now. These are the things I'm going through at the moment.
It's hard. Yeah. Well, you should do what we're doing now, actually. We are trying to get into meal prep to really help with the diet. Okay. So
what kind of meals are you prepping for the week here?
We did a spicy tuna bowl, actually. Nice. Which has just canned tuna in a spicy sauce with some kale. It's got a little rice in there, so that's where a little bit of carbs in there, but that's okay.
There you go.
And we're gonna try a couple different chicken salads, and then you just don't serve it on bread. Just serve it with celery or again, more kale. We got a whole head of kale we gotta use up, so we're gonna have it with kale.
Just meat and vegetables, people. I know it sounds dumb, but if you just eat meat and vegetables over and over again, it works. And nothing else. You just do it. You just suck it up and do it, but it works. We're a week in. Hopefully we can make it through another week in January with our respective diets. That's a wrap here for The Course of Life. For Michael, I'm Alex. We'll see you guys next week.